Susan is always tempted to stay home with her adult children and watch Netflix and paint and hide out from everyone and makes herself go do stuff. Instead, I just got a tattoo that says life is short, just to remind myself not to be a chicken and to go push myself past whatever fears and barriers I have.
Welcome to the Repurpose Your Career podcast, brought to you by Career Pivot. This podcast is where those of us in the second half of life come together to discuss how to repurpose our careers for the 21st century. Come listen to career experts give you proven strategies, listen to people like you tell their stories on how they repurpose their careers, and finally, get your questions answered. Your host, Mark Miller, has made six career pivots over the last 30 years. He understands this is not about jumping out of the frying pan into a fire, but rather to create a plan where you make clear, actionable steps or pivots to a better future career. Are you ready to repurpose your career?
Welcome to episode 122 of the Repurpose Your Career podcast. My name is Mark Miller, and I'll be your host every Monday for a discussion on what it's like to repurpose your career. Career Pivot brings this podcast to you. CareerPivot.com is one of the very few websites dedicated to those of us in the second half of life and our careers. Take a moment to check out the blog and the other resources that are delivered to you free of charge. If you are enjoying this podcast, please share it with other like-minded souls. Subscribe to CareerPivot.com, iTunes, or any other apps that supply podcasts. Share it on social media or just tell your neighbors and colleagues. If you are a regular listener to the show, you probably notice I stopped talking about the next edition of the Repurpose Your Career book. Between last week's episode and where I talked about our trip back to Austin and start the resident visa process, and this week's episode, it will become pretty evident that we've gotten busy, but we're getting back on track. My current plan is to release the third edition of the book in September of this year. I will continue to release preview chapters restarting in a couple of weeks. The next episode, I will read one of those pre-release chapters. I haven't selected it, so stay tuned. This week will be an encore episode when I interviewed Susan Leahy in episode 54, who is the co-author on the Repurpose Your Career books. Here's Susan's bio. Susan Leahy is a freelance writer who is driven to taking on new challenges, whether they're writing about the nature of meeting, the scary adventure of changing your career, or truly death-defying acts like jumping out of airplanes and parroting. Mark Miller was her first real Austin client. So listen to the very end, because I'm adding a new short interview I did with Susan as I record this yesterday, where she will tell you about her move to Portugal, where she just returned from. So I hope you enjoy this episode. Well, I've been real excited to have Susan on my podcast, because Susan is a freelance writer today, and I know a lot of the listeners want to become freelance writers. So, Susan, I've read your bio to the audience before we got on the call, but could you tell them about who the real Susan is?
Yeah, the real Susan is always tempted to stay home with her adult children and watch Netflix and paint and hide out from everyone and makes herself go do stuff. Instead, I just got a tattoo that says life is short, just to remind myself not to be a chicken and to go push myself past whatever fears and barriers I have.
So, wait a minute. You have a tat now?
Yeah, didn't you know? Didn't I tell you?
No. Is this your first tat?
First and probably only, although apparently they're addictive.
When my son moved to D.C. Yeah. And he was, and we went into a Whole Foods, and you have to understand, we live in Austin, Texas, where Whole Foods is headquartered.
The mothership.
The mothership is here. Yeah. and we went into a Whole Foods up in D.C., and everyone looked normal.
Yeah. Well,
yeah. Yeah. You know, there were no purple hair. There was no tats. There were no nose rings, nothing.
I thought that was normal now. I guess I've lived in Austin too long.
That's right. So, Susan, what did you do in the first half of life?
So I was a newspaper reporter for the beginning of my career. I worked my way up at the Kansas City Star for like from the time I was 17 through college. And then my first job out of school was there for several years. And then I got a job as an associate editor of a magazine in Kansas City that was a business lifestyle magazine. And then I started having babies. And I freelanced from home, but I was married. So my husband made most of the income and I made some income. So it was sort of supplementary. And then I did that for a while. And then at 42, I was divorced and he had switched jobs to where he had no money. He just had a midlife crisis and decided to become a furniture maker, was making like $24,000 a year. And we got divorced and I actually took the kids and moved to New Mexico. So there's a whole story behind that. But it was, we moved to an off the grid house in the middle of nowhere, a 500 square foot straw bale octagon with an outhouse and no electricity. And I did that, but I didn't, I was just desperate for work. I just kind of went for whatever I could get. Like, I don't know how long, how much of this story you want, but like the Taos news, Taos, New Mexico, which is where I moved, is just very manana. And they kept saying, oh yeah, you have these great credentials. We want to hire you or we want to use you as a freelancer. But then they would never get back to me. And so I finally got a job as a community liaison for an EPA technical assistance group that was working on a Superfund project. That was sort of stupid because I was not Hispanic and I didn't speak Spanish and I hadn't been in the community very long. So me being a community liaison was a little crazy, but I did that for a few years and I did substitute teaching and I was so broke. It was crazy. At one point we were volunteering at a food pantry just so that we could get extra food. So I did that. Finally I got on with the Taos News and then at one point, for a lot of reasons, I ended up moving to Austin.
So what did you make as a writer for the Taos News?
Oh, not much. Nobody makes much in Taos. I mean, you're either rich or you're poor. I don't remember exactly. It was like $100 an article. It was not much.
You got paid per piece?
Yeah. So, and again, like I was substitute teacher and I was terrible at that other job. So
you kind of piecemealed things together.
I really piecemealed things together. And one thing that was challenging is in Taos, Taos is like a town out of time. And if you want to freelance for other publications, you kind of have to have your finger on the pulse of what is happening now or what's up and coming so that you can do something really interesting. You can pitch something interesting or nobody's going to hire you for anything. And, you know, Taos had just gotten at Applebee's. I was like, woo, it's not even in the 21st century yet. So I didn't have my finger on the pulse of anything. I was just living in this very ethereal, beautiful backward place. So
why did you move to Austin?
So my kids were getting to be older teenagers, and to be honest, a lot of people in Taos, when they hit 18, they get pregnant and drop out of school and start having kids and driving up and down the strip. And it was like, yeah, we need something else. So I knew I wanted them to go to college. Also, it was cold all the time. It was like 9 months of the year was winter, and I don't like cold. So we had gone to Europe for a month. That's kind of a long story, but we had gone to Europe for a month and we came back and we were like, wow, that was amazing. We need to change our lives. So we did. And I kind of moved sight unseen to Austin. I'd been to Austin when I was in my 20s, and I'd visited other times, but I knew it had a similar vibe to Taos. And I knew it was a real city, and it had a university and a lot of intellectual capital. And I rented an apartment without seeing it. And we just put everything in a moving truck and drove here, and here we were.
So you kind of took a big, big risk by moving here.
Did, but I had taken a big, big risk by moving to Taos as well. So it wasn't quite as, I mean, it was scary, but I'd already kind of done it. You know, I'd left Kansas City and moved to Taos to this off the grid, weird little house in the middle of nowhere. And
now, do you still have that house?
No, I sold it. But I think I got $5.
Well, I knew talking a year or two ago, you still had the house. So what do you do today?
So just to say, when I first got here, I have to say, I was totally freaked out. I didn't have work. I didn't know what to do. I worked for Demand Media writing those eHow articles, which I hated, and they paid crap. And I was desperately like grabbing for anything. And I ran across, I met you, and you had actually talked to someone else about working with you on some white papers, which turned into your book. And then she got a job. So she recommended me. I'd met her at a networking thing. I basically just came in and said, I don't know what to do or how to make money. And I started going to networking things. And I am such an introvert that I hated it, but I had to talk myself into it. And so I met Jenny Magic, and she had a marketing website firm, and she was like 30, and she was schooling me and all this stuff. And I felt humiliated by that because I didn't really know that much about marketing, but I had to learn about it. And so I kind of went into this, I went to this one event, and I was whining to this other journalist, because in journalism, you don't have to pitch yourself at all. You say, I'm writing for such and such publication, and you don't even have to obey that day. They're still going to talk to you. It's not like in marketing where you actually have to present yourself. So I started talked to this one guy who was also a journalist, and I said, I don't know how to do this marketing stuff, and I hate it. I just want to go back to journalism, and I wish journalism was stronger, and blah, blah, blah. And I said, grow up. And I hated it because it was such a smack in the face. But about 20 minutes later, I went, you know what? He's right. So I started learning how to do blogs and how to do web content and how to network. And I basically just pushed my way through. I would literally do psychological techniques like one is called EMDR. Just to change the way that my brain was thinking about all this stuff, because it was the only way I could make myself take on the next challenge that I was unfamiliar with. I could do anything in journalism, but trying to do marketing, that sort of thing, just freaked me right out.
Explain what EMDR is. I know what it is, but.
Okay. So I don't remember what it's called. Emotional. MD processing. Reprocessing. I can't remember what it stands for, but it basically, I had so much fear around, I can talk to anyone. I can go in any crowd. I'm not intimidated if you're the president of whatever, but if I have to actually present myself instead of presenting a magazine and just try to get you to connect with me versus what I'm good at, it brings up all kinds of anxiety. And I had to teach myself that I actually had something to offer, but I had to get over the fear first. So it's basically, if you have trauma or fear in your life, it's stored in the amygdala. It's so your fear center, your emotion center of your brain, and you never really process it appropriately, so that it's just a memory. It's actually something that every time you think about it or something reminds you of it, you have all the same emotions. And I was like, this is paralyzing me, and I have to feed my kids. So I knew the main thing I had to do was get over the fear. So you basically do something. You can tap, you can, they have things on YouTube that you can watch with you, move your eyes back and forth. Or I discovered you can do exercise like jogging or something where it's right, left, and basically your brain takes that fear. And if you think about the thing you're afraid of, it puts it into the parts of your brain that are stored memories that are not anxiety producing or emotion producing. So I was like, this is what I got to do. I got to change my brain so that I can make money. And I've been doing that ever since, one respect or another.
Well, it's very true. In my community, my online community right now, I've got several creatives, and creatives typically are very introverted, and going out and selling yourself is really hard. And it's interesting. I've got one client who's in marketing now, but she started first 15 years of her career as a newscaster. She interviewed both Bushes, Jeb Bush, Bill Clinton, all these people, but presenting in front of an audience, that's kind of terrifying.
It's a totally different thing. It's so funny. It is. And I learned so much from Jenny, and it was hard for me because she was 20 years younger than I was. But what I learned from watching her was she was so confident that people relaxed because they saw her confidence. And I thought, number one, I do know how to write and write well. And number two, marketing is changing. So it's not really selling. It's more telling a story. And I'm awesome at that. But number three, if I'm anxious, nobody's going to want to hire me because it's like, oh dear, this woman doesn't have confidence that she can take care of what needs to be done. And even though I was still feeling fear inside when I was going through this process, even though I was still feeling fear inside, I realized that if I just walked in like, I totally have this, let me take that off your plate. That's all they wanted to know. They didn't want to know my ugly process. They didn't want to know how much chocolate I ate while I was, you know, figuring out how to write their web content. They didn't care about that. All they wanted to know is, can you take this off my plate? Can you solve my problem? And once I figured that out, it helped a lot.
So you got me as a client. I think I was your first major client.
You were my first major client.
So where did they go from there?
Got some blogs and that worked out or didn't work out. But what really happened is, thanks to you, I went and talked to a mutual friend. And she knew someone you had recommended go and do these office hours with her. And she knew someone who had started a tech newspaper. It was a tech news site. It was Silicon Hills News, and it was brand new. And that woman was looking for writers, and I knew nothing about tech. I had lived off the grid. I was a complete Luddite, but I was like, okay, I can do that. And she was paying $200 an article. And I thought, okay, if I just, you know, really crank out a lot of articles, then she was paying fast. And it was, so I started writing tech news articles. And thank God for the internet, because I could go and interview somebody about whatever. I don't even remember, like big data or whatever it was at the time. It was 5 or 6 years ago. You know, 6 or 7 years ago, I could go and interview somebody. And if I didn't know what their tech was, or I didn't understand it, I would just go home and Google it until I understood what the technology did. And then if I had follow-up questions, I would pursue it. So I worked with her for several years, and I still do sometimes, because she was really the first one to come out as a strictly tech and startup publication in Austin, like at the very beginning when everybody realized how hot it was going to be. And I worked with her, and because of her, I've gotten to go to South by Southwest Interactive and cover that for the last 6 years. I got to go to Thailand and see their technology that was going on there. And I still need to write more about that. And I got to go to Norway and for Oslo Innovation Week and learn about their technology. So because of her and because of writing for Silicon Hills News, I am now well-versed at writing about tech and startups. Oh, and I got an article in Wired, and I'm still trying for more of those. So there was that. But the other thing that happened was one of my first interviews was a guy in town named Bijoy Goswami. and he's a bootstrap guru. So he helps people work through the process. Again, it's a sort of psychological, emotional journey of starting your own business and the risks and the fears that you have to deal with. And I wrote about Bejoy, and he really liked the article that I wrote about him, the profile. And about a year later, his best friend, Danny Gutnick in Phoenix, Arizona, who runs a sort of recruiting slash leadership culture organization, was looking for somebody to help him write a book. And I have been working with Danny for the last 4 years, and we did write a book, and we're going to write more. I'm doing articles to promote the book at this point, and still working with him and also doing some of his marketing and things like that. So that's a lot of what I do, but I still, like, if I have bandwidth, then I just start looking, like, on Glassdoor or like Media Bistro. I just start, I'm like, oh, got to go out and network again. And I just sort of put it out into the universe and put it out to people I know, hey, I'm looking for work, and look on all the job boards, and I have Google alerts that say, you know, ghostwriter wanted, although those are usually fairly useless. It's like, I'm going to pay you $12 for this. I've done mentoring with people, and I've actually had a woman I was mentoring hook me up with a gig of writing for Zendesk. So yeah, that's what I do. I work with Danny most of the time. I work with Danny a lot of the time, but I also write blogs and marketing stuff for other people. And I still do journalism. So
how did this turn out differently than you expected?
Well, you know, I was an old school journalism person. I mean, when I was a kid, I saw All the President's Men, and my sister was a journalist, and I never thought journalism wouldn't really be here. And I never thought that most of my friends who were in journalism would end up out of jobs because journalism was dying and they couldn't figure out a business model. And they still can't figure out a business model. I literally thought, can I stay in journalism long enough, like, that I die before it does altogether? And the answer was no. Not if you want to eat, and not if you want to feed your kids. I never thought I would be a tech writer. I didn't like tech. I initially never thought I'd be a business writer when I was in my 20s, and I ended up as a business writer, and I was so glad that I did. Never thought I would be a tech writer, and I'm so glad that I pursued that, because that's where the world is heading now. That's the brave new world. I never thought I would get to travel to all these countries that they would just fly me over.
And you didn't drink while you were at any of these in Taiwan or Norway, right?
Okay, next question.
Because I knew these folks were fun people to be around.
Oh my gosh, they were so much fun. And tech people are fun because they're all trying something scary. So that's when one time I actually was in a little session, and they were saying, well, what's your why? And it was the whole Simon Sinek thing, and I never thought about it. And I realized that I love writing about people who are trying to do scary, brave things, like what you're doing. I mean, the business that you started, it was scary new for you when you started it, but it's also scary new for every person who comes to you. Well, it's like my tattoo says, life is short. So if you avoid all the scary things, then you will still have terrible things happen because people die and, you know, there's floods and stuff. But you won't have done it in the pursuit of something you really, really want. So that's sort of been my thing that I poke and prod myself. And sometimes I've actually talked to my oldest son. I would get freaked out because I would go through a really broke period, and it would be like, well, okay, we're not going to pay the utility bill this month. And my oldest son, say, I just need to get a real job. And my son would say, Mom, that's your despair voice talking. So it's like, you know, they were behind me and they were encouraging, and for the most part, it's turned out amazingly. I definitely supporting myself. I'm definitely not rich. I could be if that was my focus, but my focus has really been on, can I write stuff that I love and that fuels me as well as pays me? And 99% of what I write fits that category. So,
well, Susan, you know, number one, I'm proud of you because I've watched you over these last 4 or 5 years kind of grow. And yes, you've gone through some hard times, but you're a survivor. And you've managed to have 3 great kids. They all went on full rides to college. And where's your oldest son? He was in Morocco.
He is in Morocco.
Okay.
He's in Morocco. He's in Tangier now.
And he's teaching English there?
He's teaching English there, yeah.
Okay. So I want to be respectful of your time. Is there anything you'd like to add and tell my audience before we wrap up?
Yeah, actually there is. People look at other people doing things and they say, and people say this about me, oh, you're brave and you're this and you're that. And they don't realize how much work it is to make yourself get over your... I mean, I know that there are people out there who just aren't afraid to do things. I'm not one of them. I just make myself do them. Like, I jumped out of a plane on my 50th birthday because it was like, I got to do it. and they don't realize how much. Most people don't realize how many stories that they have in their heads about themselves or their potential that really are just very self-limiting. And because they don't stop and pay attention to what's actually driving them in one direction or another, they just keep going in that direction, not really realizing that it's not reality that's pushing them that way. It's just the stuff that's in their head that's always been in there. And it's like Steve Jobs says, once you realize that all the things that you think are rules are just something that somebody else made up while they were doing their life and you don't actually have to follow them, it's scary because you are now in charge of steering the ship and you might crash, but it's also so liberating. So my life is way more fun and interesting than I expected it to be. And now I'm, you know, hoping to move to Morocco sometime in the next year or two. So,
well, we made the decision in the last 2 weeks, we're moving to Mexico. So, we're moving to Ajijic, Mexico next year,
which is such an awesome name for a town to move to.
Well, it's Ajijic, and the proper pronunciation is Ajijic.
Ah, okay.
You got to get the he at the end.
Okay.
Anyway, Susan, I really appreciate you telling your story because you're like a lot of my listeners who are going, okay, how am I going to do this? And I remember, by the way, EMDR, I think stands for eye movement.
Something. Eye movement desensitization reprocessing, I think.
Yeah. Actually, I had a former employee who actually worked for the EMDR Institute or something. And that's where I first learned about EMDR. But
I just am really into neuroscience and rewiring your brain. And like, basically what you think is reality is really just the reality you were raised with. Doesn't mean that's true. If you were raised in another country, another family, your reality would be different. So if you want your reality to be different, just rewire your brain. It's actually totally doable. So.
Well, Susan, again, I really appreciate you coming on the Repurpose Your Career podcast.
All right. Thank you so much for having me on. And I look forward to the next edition of the book. Can't wait to work on that.
Welcome, Susan. Thank you. Everyone has heard your previous interview, but things have changed.
Yes, they have.
So what has changed?
So I am planning to move to Portugal. And I just got back from Portugal. And I decided on Portugal. I was planning to move to Morocco initially. And then my son said, you know, Mom, as long as you don't understand Arabic, you won't know what the men are saying to you as you pass by on the street. And it was like, oh, dang. that doesn't sound good. That doesn't sound like something I want to happen. So I started looking into other options, and I found out that Portugal is one of, I think, two countries in Europe that has a visa for self-employed people who don't make a bazillion dollars. And my understanding is one is the Netherlands and one is Portugal, and the Netherlands is cold and expensive and Portugal is warm and cheap. So I settled on Portugal. And everybody I mentioned it to said, oh my gosh, it's so beautiful. You're not going to believe it. So I went through a process. I was going to apply for a visa without going, but that was turning out catastrophic because it turns out I had to actually have a lease for an apartment, not like a reservation at an Airbnb or something else. I had to have an actual legal lease. And to have a legal lease, I had to have a tax number. And to have a tax number, I had to go to Portugal or pay someone to get it. It just turned out to be a better option for me to go myself and set things up, which was a really good idea.
What changed in your life? I think you have these three animals that lived with you.
Oh, well, there's that. Yes, absolutely. So my youngest graduated from college. And while he's still living with me, and actually I moved in with my daughter, my middle child, my son and I both moved in with my middle child while we get ready for me to move to Portugal. It was like, you know, they're going to get a life and they're my favorite people. And I thought I can hang around here and just sort of make a life, or I can do what I've always wanted to do, which is go move to Europe. So
you became an empty nester.
Well, technically, not really, but yes, theoretically, I'm an empty nester.
Okay.
In reality, I am living with my daughter. My son lives here too. So we all get along really well.
Once you get to Portugal, are you going to be a real empty nester?
Not necessarily. Okay. My youngest is going to come with me, not on a visa, but just for a few months to check it out. And he might come to Portugal as well. And actually, my daughter went with me to Portugal, and she's like, I love it here. I want to live here too. So technically, I'm supposedly an empty nester.
So what's driving you to go to Morocco or Portugal? Why?
Okay. So the prospect of being an empty nester was terrifying to me because I am single, and because it looked like I had this purpose in my life of raising these guys for the last 20 something years. And it was like, I don't know what's next. I don't know what's important. And I don't want to just end up filling time. I don't want to just go like, well, now I have all this free time. I'll take a class or get a spin class or do Sudoku. It's like, I don't know what I want to do with myself, but I don't want to just fill time. And one thing I have always wanted to do is travel. So I just decided I needed to find a place where I could live and see the world more inexpensively, because as you know, it's kind of hard to get around the world from the US. It's expensive, and I'm sick right now because of being on a plane for 10 hours coming back from London. So, does that answer your question?
Yeah. And how do you plan on continue to do your freelance writing business while you're in Portugal?
So I have talked to several of my clients and said, this is my plan. Do you have a problem with it? And since I work remotely with most people anyway, I haven't even met several of my clients in person. They were all like, no, that's fine. No big deal. So I have kind of ongoing clients who said that they were totally cool with me being in Portugal and that wasn't going to be an issue. So that's what I'm going to do. And I might work with some Portuguese companies, but I think that's more complicated. And it's just really easy to keep working with U.S. companies.
Have you figured out the technology piece, the cell phones, the internet and all that yet?
Sort of. So when I went to Portugal, it was not a vacation at all. It was running around checking out apartments, and I got my SIM card, so I now have a Portuguese phone number. And then I went, I was gonna do everything on my own because I was like, oh, I'm a journalist, I can figure this out. And then I almost made a very costly mistake of paying someone to send me a contract for an apartment that wouldn't have been legal. And so I ended up hiring, I call her a handler, but she's an advisor, a consultant, but she took me to, she's Canadian, she's lived all over the world. And when I went to Portugal, she took me to the finances office, and I got my tax number. And then we went to the bank account, and I opened a Portuguese bank account. And so with those things, I was able to theoretically rent an apartment. And we looked at, she recommended me this fantastic real estate agent, which was super important because Portugal is, I love it. It's beautiful and it's fantastic. But apparently, and this is one of the things I actually think I will love about it, people don't want to work that hard. So my understanding is sometimes when you contact a Portuguese real estate agent, they may or may not call you back. They're just not, they do not hustle. And this agent is from Sao Paulo. She's lived in Portugal for 2 years and she hustles. And so she took me to two different apartments two of them I thought one was going to work out, and then the person backed out because they're just, a lot of the property owners are older and they are not used to renting to foreigners and they don't trust the system of renting for foreigners. So they just sort of freaked out at the last minute. Most Portuguese people have a guarantor, so like a co-signer, which I don't. So then they wanted like 6 months rent in advance, which I don't have. Anyway, so I've had two different apartments that I thought were going to work out, and then they backed out. And then Fabiola, my real estate agent, had lunch with a friend who was an agent who had an apartment. At any rate, it looks like I'm finally maybe going to get an apartment. I'm waiting for the contract. So they don't have boilerplate contracts. You actually have to have a lawyer draw up each contract, and it has to be bilingual. So hopefully I'll have a contract in the next couple of days. And then I was on a Facebook group where they were talking about internet, and my real estate agent, who's going to live in the same neighborhood as I am, had commented on there, which internet provider she uses. And so I'm like, okay, I'll just go with that. So theoretically, it's all going to just work out fine. If nothing else, I'll go to a cafe someplace.
Very cool. Susan, I'm very proud of you for having make this leap. And by the way, here in Mexico, mañana does not mean tomorrow. It means not today.
Well, no, and I want to thank you for being so appreciative. I mean, because I was freaking, as you know, I was like so scared. And when I got there, or before I got there, I was like, what if I hate it here? What if they don't want Americans here? What if they're rude? What if they're very stylish? Because I just don't do that. And it turned out it's very chill, very relaxed. Several people said, oh, you should move here. Which actually is funny because during South by Southwest, I was in Austin and somebody skated by on his skateboard and said, don't move here. So because people are,
yes,
you know, the whole contingent of people who don't want anyone else moving to Austin. Yeah. So it turned out that I was just like, yeah, I could really do this. I love it here. It's beautiful. It's stunningly beautiful. The food is very good. Everything's affordable. And people are insanely nice. So,
ain't that great?
Yes, it is. It's going to be great.
Well, thank you, Susan, for giving us an update on where you're at.
Well, thank you, Mark. And thank you for being so supportive because I was really wigging before I went. but I think it's going to be great.
So. For my listeners, I talked Susan off the ledge before she went.
Yes, you did. Yes, he did.
I will. Thank you very much, Susan.
All right. Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. Susan has done a lot of research on this move. I was really worried that she was going to move to Porto without ever visiting Porto. If you remember in episode 119, when I interviewed Queen Michelle, she moved to the north shore of Lake Chapala without ever having visited. Queen did a ton of research and even walked around the town using Google Maps Street View feature. As I said, I helped Susan kind of talk her off the ledge before she went, and she's doing quite well. The Career Pivot Community website has become a valuable resource for more than 50 members who are participating in the beta phase of this project, and we've crossed the 50-member threshold. I'm currently recruiting new members for the next cohort. If you are interested in learning more about the endeavor or would like to be put on the waiting list, please go to careerpivot.com/community. When you sign up, you'll receive more information about the community as it evolves. It is those who are in these initial cohorts get to set the direction of this endeavor. This is a paid membership community where I will be offering group coaching, special content, mastermind groups, branding sessions, Slack channels, and more importantly, it'll be a community where you can seek help. Please go to careerpivot.com/community to sign up to learn more. Feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn at linkedin.com/in/MR Miller or Mr. Miller, and just include in the connection request that you listen to this podcast. Look for Career Pivot on Facebook and LinkedIn. You'll also find me on Twitter at Career Pivot. Please come back next week when I'll be reading a chapter from the next edition of Repurpose Your Career. Thank you for listening all the way to the end of the Repurpose Your Career podcast. You will find all the show notes at careerpivot.com/episode-122. Who would have thought when we got started that I would have gotten to 122 episodes? Please hop over to careerpivot.com, subscribe to get updates on this podcast and all the other happenings at Career Pivot. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Podbeam, Overcast, or Spotify. Hope to see you next Monday for another episode of Repurpose Your Career podcast.